Yes, I am Yada. Each weekday morning on GCN, we expose and condemn the beguiling and the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, with military and economic schemes, with patriotism in the media. You'll listen to this program. We'll strive to open your eyes, even change your mind, towards each of these things upon which most people foolishly cling. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, our mission is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. I'd like to reveal the motivations of the perpetrators and share what you can do to protect your family, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. It's going to be a rocky road. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh, that's God's one and only name, on his terms by way of his one and only covenant through his always dependable and extraordinarily relevant Torah, which means teaching, not law, so that with God's guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason. Our phone number for those who would like to engage in this discussion is 877-300-7645. I read this morning in the Los Angeles Times that in the fiscal cliff discussions, politicians are now discussing the elimination of the mortgage deduction. Now, while there are pluses and minuses of the mortgage deduction, what it does is it artificially favors housing and makes housing look like it is a business enterprise as opposed to simply a means to shelter one's family. The very fact that we have a income tax system necessitates that there are things that society wants more of that can serve as deductions from the amount of tax owed. The only value in income tax, as opposed to other forms of government revenue, like a national sales tax, is that you can encourage things you want more of by having deductions for them, and you can discourage things you want less of by putting surtaxes on them. For example, if you want less alcohol consumption, you tax it more. If you want people to buy homes so they're invested in the nation, in the society, then you create deductions for mortgage payments. If you want people to be responsible for their own retirement, you create deductions for retirement savings. If you want people to invest in their own education, you create deductions for investments in education. If you want them to be responsible for their own health care, you allow the deduction of health care costs. It's really that simple. The moment you eliminate deductions for the things that society wants more of, the things that it would like to encourage, then you need to scrap the Internal Revenue Service entirely. Now, my concern here is double-fold, and that is that by the government interfering in home loans, by through Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, by creating a playing field where homeowners were favored over businesses for access to money, and where the government orchestrated systems where people were given artificially low rates on adjustable rate mortgages, which would absolutely go up and therefore make them mortgages impossible for them to pay, and where people who were unqualified for loans were granted loans, and people, rather than having to have an investment in the house and putting 20% down, were given up to 105% of the purchase price of the home. That combination of things, all orchestrated by the federal government, is what caused this most recent recession. And now to say in the midst of it, because the government, the reason that we haven't come out of this housing-borne recession is because the government has established another set of laws over banks, which says that there will be federal penalties for loans to people who are not qualified. But they did not establish what was considered unqualified. And so today, if you want to buy a home, you can't get a loan. And that's the reason we have not come out of this housing-borne recession. And so this group of nincompoops in Washington on both sides of the aisle are now talking about removing the mortgage deduction. Now, if you do that on top of everything else you've done to destroy the value of people's homes, You might as well just confiscate everything they have. Also interesting as it relates to the fiscal cliff is that the head of the International Monetary Fund, who came up with the term that seems to be dragging America around by the nose, fiscal cliff, she told Americans that you need to solve this problem by both spending cuts and revenue increases. Yes, it's the International Monetary Fund. It is international bankers, this woman, French, who wish to influence what we do in America. The fact is, this is a spending problem. The only way to resolve the deficit is to radically reduce the size of government. 50% cuts across the board. That's the first step that needs to be taken. There was an interesting wrinkle in world economics, and we speak of world economics on this program for several reasons. One, Yahweh specifically asked us to walk away from our country before we engage in the covenant relationship with him. So you cannot be political, you cannot be patriotic, and be a member of God's family. You cannot have a relationship with God if you are dependent upon your government, if you rely upon your government, if you are in love with your government, if you are in service to your government. You cannot have a relationship with God. His first requirement for walking away from the, for participation in the covenant. There's only one of them. And his requirement for participation in his covenant is walking away from government, from your country. And so it is important for us to speak about the malfeasance of nations today. And the fact that their goal has been to cause their population to become dependent upon them. That's why there is Medicare. That is why there is Social Security. That is why there are food stamps. That's why there is welfare. That's why there is redistribution of wealth. Is that politicians have power when people become dependent upon the organizations they control. And it's important not only to let people know that this is not appropriate, it's immoral on their behalf, because all they're doing is destroying their children's futures for their own personal indulgences. But it's also important that people understand that the countries, the nations that they are depending upon are not reliable. Every one of these nations is going to fail, and they're all going to fail within the next 20 years. Some much sooner than that. This deficit financing binge that the world is on is not sustainable. And so we turn to Europe, where we're seeing this also play out, but in a microcosm of what we see in the United States in a slightly different manner, because you have a few still reasonably strong countries that are bailing out the weak ones. And the second weakest country in Europe is Italy. Its prime minister resigned over the weekend. Monti's weekend announcement that he would step down early, made after former prime minister Silvio Berlusconi's PDL party. Berlusconi is a conservative in Italy. He would be, his party is typically endorsed by the Roman Catholic Church. He turned out to be sexually indulgent, doing many things that were inappropriate, and was far more interested in taking care of his personal interests than he was the country's interest. And that is how he was displaced by Monti. Well, his party withdrew its support. You know, they have a parliamentary system in Europe, which is absolute guarantee of destructive government, because Berlusconi wants to run again. Now, when they did that, Italy's borrowing costs soared, and there was a stock market sell-off. The campaign for an election expected in February is likely to be fought over Monti's reform agenda, which Europe loves, because it was in keeping with this new Euro standard, which sets the maximum debt limits for a country and their how much they can spend, so that individual countries do not bankrupt the euro. Now, they're having almost no effective control in that area, however. Monti was their shining star, and he now has resigned. Now, it is said in his article that Berlusconi claimed that Italy was condemned to a recession and forced, which forced him to run for a fifth term as prime minister because of Monti's actions. There's the masses of people in the United States and in Europe believe that it is government spending that creates prosperity and that fiscal responsibility is what creates recessions. And so the majority of people would be opposed in Italy now to Monte. After several weeks of calm, the markets bridled at the prospect of Berlusconi's return to the center-right government that drove the scandal-plagued, as they said, billionaire from office to be replaced by Monte's technocrats. Opinion polls suggest that Berlusconi has almost no chance of re-election. They say that this is, I'm reading this exactly as they wrote it. The center-left Democratic Party under Pier Luigi Bersani holds a strong lead and is likely to form the next government on a broadly pro-European platform, largely in line with Monti's agenda. Now, they called him a center-left Democratic Party leader. Bersani is a communist. By his own admission, his entire life has been spent serving the Communist Party. And that journalism and journalists, education establishments in America, this is a Reuters report, but educational establishments in Europe and in America and politics around the world has turned so liberal that a communist is considered center-left by the media. Pretty amazing, huh? A no-frills communist whose close ties to Italy's unions, Bersani has promised to stick to the fiscal discipline the government has made and said that Monti is likely to continue playing a role after the election. I can guarantee you, a communist is elected and you will see the very essence of what brought Italy to its knees exacerbated, accelerating off the cliff as we have done in America. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Just to conclude our story on Italy, the article continues with whoever wins will have to confront a severe recession, record unemployment, and a ballooning public debt expected to surpass 126% of gross domestic product this year. Now, to put that in perspective, at $16.5 trillion, which is where the United States is now, on about a $15 trillion gross domestic product, we're approaching that same number rapidly, and within a couple of years we'll be at 126%, maybe 3 years from now. But also keep in mind that you can't look at the U.S. gross domestic product actually as $15 billion. And there's two reasons. The primary reason is that that federal spending, just recirculation of federal malfeasance, represents 25% of American GDP today. Those aren't real jobs. You might as well just call that government spending. 25%. So you have to actually reduce to figure out a percentage of what Americans actually make. Our debt is already backing out to the government recirculation of taxpayer money and of debt is already at 126%. And second, America's manufacturing prowess fell again. It's now nearing 10% of gross domestic product. And as a result, we don't make much of anything. 90% of what the government does has nothing to do with making anything. What America does has nothing to do with making anything. And worse, the one thing that we actually make well is bad. Bombs and their delivery systems. We are the world's foremost merchant of death. Speaking of Italy, the report in the newspaper concludes with the GDP of Italy is has shrunk 2.5% in the third quarter alone, and industrial production is dropping 1% just in the month of October. In other words, Italy is only slightly worse than America. And that nation, apart from the cradle of the European Union, would be bankrupt. This is an interesting story. I'm going to read it from Reuters, but you could have picked it up in a number of different places. It exposes the nature of journalism and the mindset of the world. It reads, Hamas's vow to vanquish Israel after claiming victory in last month's Gaza conflict vindicates Israel's reluctance to relinquish more land to the Palestinians, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday. Now, if you were an informed and rational individual, if you had any moral fiber to your nature, you would not have had to end that by saying, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday. You could have just have said that Hamas's vow to vanquish Israel. The head of Hamas held a rally in Israel over the weekend, and he said that they would reclaim by force of arms all of what they call Palestine, and he described it from the river to the sea, which means from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, from north to south. Their goal is to forcibly expel all Jews from Israel and to rename it Palestine and as a homeland for the mythical people. So all you really have to do is listen to what the idiot said and say, wow, the United Nations was stupid to award these people statehood, and you can't give these people land for peace. They are committed to the destruction of Israel. Just say it. Khalid Mashal, the leader of the Islamist Hamas movement, made a defiant speech before thousands of supporters in the Gaza Strip on Saturday, promising to take inch by inch all modern-day Israel, which he said he would never recognize. Hamas is the elected governance, if you will, of the mythical Palestinian people. They voted by 70% Hamas over Fatah. Fatah is the PLO. And by the way, this speech was made in front of the leader of Fatah, who didn't disagree that their goals were the same, the destruction of Israel. This is a quote. Over the last day, we have been exposed to the true face of our enemies. They have no intention of compromising with us. They want to destroy our country, Netanyahu told his weekly cabinet meeting. No kidding, Sherlock. What was your first clue? The Israel leader has faced fierce foreign criticism this week for announcing a wave of Jewish settlements, buildings, and occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, after the UN recognition of a Palestinian state. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. If you'd like to engage in this discussion, you're welcome to call 877-300-7645. Just pause for a moment and think of how messed up mentally you would have to be, how jaundiced you would have to be, how incapable of judgment you would need to be to expose the Israeli leader to fierce criticism for announcing that he's going to build homes when you took the opposite approach and awarded statehood on a 20-to-1 basis internationally to a group of religious terrorists who committed to destroy a country. And you don't criticize the terrorists who are vocally and physically demonstrating that they wish to destroy a country, and yet you condemn and you're looking for ways to punish the country for protecting itself and for building homes. That is just so alarmingly inappropriate. And to think that that position is held in the world by a factor of 20 to 1. That was the UN vote. By a factor of 20 to 1. It would be alarming if one out of 20 governments felt the way that is the things are articulated in this article. That would be alarming. But it's 20 to 1 the other way. Netanyahu said that Israel would never withdraw unilaterally from the West Bank as it had done in Gaza in 2005, arguing that this would create another territory from which why doesn't Israel just call them the so-called Palestinians? It would be in their interest to tell the truth in this regard, from which Palestinians could launch rockets at Israeli cities. That's one of the problems and I want to be critical here of Israel. The moment you stop exposing words for what they actually mean, for the truth that is laden in them, and just use words because it's easier to communicate with people as opposed to actually teaching through words, then you lose the high moral ground. You lose the ability to be effective in your communications. Now, a great example of this is the so-called Palestinian. The moment you use their term, you acquiesce to their term and use that term, then you're siding on the auspices of myth. You're promoting the myth. This notion that there is a Palestinian people who are deserving of it, Palestine is their homeland, is a complete lie. There are no such things, Palestinian people. There were some Philistines, but they were annihilated by the Assyrians and the Babylonians 2,500 years ago. And they never referred to their homeland as Palestine. It's a complete and utter myth. After promoting that myth, Netanyahu said, and I quote, "I am always aghast at the delusions of others who are prepared to pursue this process and call it peace," he said. Boy, is there truth in that. You know, it was about 2 years ago that Benjamin Netanyahu lectured the world. The primary purpose was to lecture Obama, who had done and said things that were just unbelievably stupid vis-a-vis Israel. And in his speech, he went over the history of the Middle East, because Obama was talking about the same and promoting the same myth, which is this myth of a place called Palestine and the need for a Palestinian nation for the Palestinian people. And Netanyahu went through the history of the place. And when you go through the history of the place, you find that in the history even of what happened after World War I and after World War II, that this notion of giving Muslims more land, which they have way too much of, and it's underdeveloped, for promises of peace, which they have never had, never in their history, it's got to be the greatest delusion in the world. And the fact that people call this peace says that either they're completely ignorant, completely irrational, or totally immoral. Netanyahu is saying we want true peace with our neighbors, which is impossible. And he knows it's impossible. Islam is more anti-Semitic, more anti-Jewish than is Hitler's Mein Kampf. And to try to, for Jews to try to negotiate peace with the Nazis would be as futile as Jews trying to negotiate peace with Muslims as a result. There's one difference, of course. Mein Kampf was allegedly and knowingly, admittedly written by a man who's now long since dead. The Quran, Muslims believe, was written by Allah. And the fact that the Quran is more anti-Semitic, more anti-Jewish than was Hitler's Mein Kampf means that so long as Muslims live, Israel will never be safe. What's interesting, this is another quote, is that Abu Mazen, which is Abbas, of all people, did not condemn the Hamas words calling for Israel's destructions, just as previously he did not condemn the rockets fired at Israel from Gaza, Netanyahu said. And to my regret, he is working for unity with this very same Hamas, which is supported by Iran. Hamas is celebrating the 25th anniversary of its founding this week, turning the event into a victory party following its eight-day conflict with Israel last month, in which some 170 Palestinians and six Israelis, mostly civilians, were killed. Yes, Islam is delusional. All religions are delusional. Islam is the most delusional religion because it is literally a mirror image. It's an upside-down picture of Yahweh. It has Satan replace Yahweh as God. Right is wrong. Good is bad. And so, in a delusional religion, delusions are prevalent. This is the kind of attitude, response, that people who have lost a conflict would have. Ego drives Islam. It's an astonishingly arrogant religion. And yet, look at the mess. Look at the living hell that Muslims endure. It has absolutely nothing to brag about. And yet, what does it do? It brags. You can't reason with such people. They are driven by rage. Israel not only killed the group's only military mastermind during the fighting, but also destroyed Gaza's long-range rocket arsenals, all of which were made by Iran, and secured a ceasefire that put an end to the indiscriminate attacks from the coastal enclave that they engaged to end.
Quick thing. You were just talking about Islam and how arrogant it is and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, that might also be part of the reason that it is the fastest growing religion in American prisons right now.
Yes, it is. Well, it's perfect for American prisons. I mean, I've got this religion for you, prisoner who is in prison because he kidnapped somebody. He was a pedophile. He raped someone. He stole somebody's property. He killed someone. I've got a perfect religion for you. In my religion, killers, I go to heaven. In my religion, if you are a pedophile, you're exonerated. Our religious founder was a pedophile. In our religion, if you were a rapist, no problemo. The founder of our religion was a rapist. If you're a thief, no problem. The Quran says stealing is lawful and good. Everything that you've done that is bad, we consider good in Islam. We've got the perfect religion for you.
It would make you feel like you're the God that you're...
You're just like your God. You're the spitting image of your God.
Exactly.
If you're a rapist, you're a pedophile, if you're a murderer, if you're a terrorist, if you any of these things, if you're a thief, if you're a kidnapper, you are the spitting image of Muhammad and his wannabe God. What's not to like? Well, there's nothing to like if you're a moral individual. But you don't typically end up in prison because you're a moral individual. It is amazing, though, that the problem here is that people just don't understand Islam. And therefore, there's this knee-jerk reaction that, we'll just negotiate with them. They'll agree to negotiation. They're reasonable people. We can negotiate with them, and we can trust that they will honor whatever it is that we negotiate with them. And just no understanding whatsoever of the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, where Muhammad promised that he would put in writing that he would not terrorize the Meccans anymore, that he wouldn't kidnap their children, that he wouldn't enslave them anymore. He wouldn't do any of these things for 10 years. And the following year, he came down with more men under arms and promptly conquered the place, killing anybody that didn't surrender to him. And to do so, he had his God write in the ninth surah, any agreement between a Muslim and non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim.
Part of the problem is that I think more people know Islam and more people believe that it is a good thing. But I think that a lot of people are fearful to speak out about it. Take yourself in case. You know, you speak your mind. You say what you say the truth as far as your research tells you and everything like that, which it tells me that you're telling the truth. But how many death threats did you receive? A guy creates some stupid movie about, you know, the Prophet Muhammad, which shouldn't enrage anybody. And then, you know, people are trying to blame, you know, our consulate attack on that.
Right.
When people speak out and they say the truth, it tends to make, it tends to receive a rabid animal response from the Muslim community. And I think that might hold some people back from saying what they believe.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to stand up against the flow of humanity and to take a stand for truth. I received 1,000 death threats for exposing the truth about Islam. Most people don't want to do that, but more importantly, in your community, you're shunned in your community if you tell the truth. And if you tell the truth about Christianity, about Paul, about Muhammad, about any of these things, about the nature of Social Security and Medicare being Ponzi schemes, if you tell the truth and expose the myths that people cling to, you become despised. You are crucified publicly in your community. And so most people just go along with the flow. They go along with the crowd. And that's why God says you need to turn your back and walk away from these things if you're going to enjoy a relationship with me. Shattering this, I'd like to share just a brief article with you, and then we're going to turn to Jason, who's calling in from Toronto. The European Union announced today that it was looking for ways to press Israel to ditch the plan to build settlements in the highly sensitive area of the occupied West Bank and trying to find tougher sanctions to apply against Israel. Now, they made this announcement after the head of Hamas said that he and his organization were going to continue using all arms and means at their disposal to claim all of Israel for themselves and to destroy all Jews who infest it. So after making that claim, rather than the European Union saying, boy, we really need to reverse course and we need to chastise Hamas and the mythical Palestinian people for wanting to destroy a country. No, they're saying what we need to do is we need to stop Israel from building homes. Now, Israel's response is, at this point, the European Union has lost whatever little credibility it may have previously had with the Israeli government. I doubt that there is a package of positive or incentives that can convince Netanyahu to listen to European advice. That being the case, Jason, I think you wanted to mention the charming fellow known to the world as Malcolm X, that he had some Islamic ties, didn't he?
Yeah, I honestly don't know a lot about it, but I just kind of thought about how you said that, you know, Muhammad was a slave trader and, you know, even sold children into slavery. And then I thought, like, wait a minute, what about, you know, Malcolm X is kind of shown as this sort of liberator. And
yes,
it's just an example of what's going on, I think, is that, you know, people who don't know Yah and his Torah, they don't have any of Yah's instructions or insight, that they automatically, they're all defaulting into a hostility towards Israel. It's just a,
yes,
it's almost a spell being cast,
yes,
over the world. It's,
yes,
quite chilling.
Yes, it is. And for those that don't know, Malcolm X was a petty con man, and he embraced Islam. His organization was called the Nation of Islam, and it took a form of Islam that it used to effectively fleece people, because, as I said, Malcolm X was a con man. And And of course, it was all masked in the idea of African Americans standing up against the Caucasians who had enslaved them, when in fact it is Islam that is based upon enslaving people. That's how Muhammad actually financed Islam. As a matter of fact, most people don't know that the first war that America fought was against the Ottoman Empire, and it was because of the role that Muslims were playing enslaving people in Africa. That most of the slaves who came to America were enslaved by fellow Africans, but it after a while, the Africans had so many slaves because of their tribal skirmishes that they just started killing the people that they had vanquished, and so it was an influence of Islam in the northwestern Africa that ultimately revitalized the slave trade and caused, facilitated, if you will, the importation of Africans into America. And so rather than Islam being the liberation from slavery, it is the religion of slavery.
Yeah, and yet look at the influence he had. And you know, it seems to me that Hasatan can only manipulate people that are blind in one way or another. He always controls in a blind spot.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
But people help him. I mean, religion is there to blind people. It precludes them from being rational. Politics, patriotism does the same thing. It blinds people from examining the evidence and considering it logically. And so the more human institutions that Hasatan, Satan, can have ally with his agenda, the easier it is to fool people.
Yeah. It's just creepy how quickly people just default into that
mindset. Yeah, you know, I spent the weekend preparing a show. It was the Sabbath show on Yada Yada Radio, on specifically this, on the letter to the Hebrews and how it used the order of Melchizedek to specifically oppose the Torah, and how quickly after Yahusha delivered his Torah supportive message that this new group called Christians would convolute it. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back in a moment.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country.